Here's the deal. We shall recap absolutely everything happening around the Midlands so you can make plans for this weekend. And if you know of something, if you're involved in something, just in case it's not on the list, pick up your text message and 083 30 10 103. Send it to me and we will include it in our roundup 10 minutes from now. In County Laois, hopes are high ahead of Sunday's All-Ireland Ladies Final in Croke Park. The opposition comes from Wexford and we will have full commentary at 1:45 provided by Pat O'Sullivan and Mags McAvoy. It has been an incredible journey for Laois in 2022, as chronicled now by Midlands 103's sports editor, David Hollywood.
Over the last 3 years, we've really been building, and you know, these things don't happen overnight. Rome wasn't built in a day, so like, there's been a graft here for the last 3 years with Donny and the crew and all the girls here building, like, you know, it's been a huge process. So to actually have gotten now the chance to play in Croke Park and to get back to senior football, which is always the ultimate goal, like, it's absolutely huge, and we're all so excited for it. You know, the opportunity to play in Croke Park in headquarters, that's what you dream of when you pick up a football when you're 5, 6, 7, 8, whatever age you are. Like, so to get the chance to play there is absolutely huge.
That was Anna Healy speaking in advance of the All-Ireland Intermediate Championship football final taking place this Sunday. Laois began their journey to Croke Park in Group A of the Leinster Championship. Louth were accounted for in round one. Next, Offaly were beaten by a solitary point. Then Wicklow were comfortably outscored in the final group game. That meant a Leinster semi-final date with Wexford. Pat O'Sullivan will be calling the action on commentary with Mags McAvoy beside him.
Very welcome here to MW Hare Moor Park, of course, like everywhere else. It's lovely and sunny. Amy Potts into Lormy Maher, back to Sarah Ann. Now the break and Aaron Poppin. Laois are up the other way. Mole's on the end of it. And Mole buries it net now. As I said, Laois players there everywhere. Wexford players trying to stand up. This is a ding-dong battle is coming. Who's going to break? Who's going to give first? Or who's going to do something wrong? They can't. Wexford still in position. And then there's a player free outside here on the 40-meter line with a shot. And a goal from Wexford. My God, that came from the 40-meter line. While all the Laois players are back, Mags are
looking up to see, drops the ball into the square. It's picked up by Murphy inside there, the full forward. Ashley Murphy bearing in the goal. And Ashley Murphy buries it to the net. That was just something that they shouldn't have allowed happen, Mags, obviously, you know. But Ashley Murphy, really dangerous player in there.
Final whistle. Wexford deserve it. I feel like they came into the extra time with a little more momentum than Laois did. Laois were on the back foot coming in. They took their opportunities in the first half. They handled that wind well in the first half and went 3 points ahead into the second half, the extra time. And you know, it's unfortunate for Laois. It's a great game to get against a really, really strong Wexford side, and they'll take a lot of positives, but they'll learn a lot as well for it going into the All-Ireland series.
That extra time defeat to Wexford meant a Leinster Championship exit. They would face Tyrone and Louth in their All-Ireland group phase. After coverage of this game, we heard from Laois manager Donny Brennan and Will O'Callaghan on the inside line.
Very welcome here, Will. Thanks very much. Lovely evening for football. Laois and Tyrone, of course, round three of this Group D. Both we know are qualified through to quarterfinal, but it depends who ends up.
To move into. She does that. Leaves it off. Laois on the run again, on the attack again, and that's brilliant direct running, and it's still Fitzpatrick, and it's all Fitzpatrick. What a finish! Brilliant, brilliant goal by Laois. These two teams are really going at it. We've had 3 goals in 8 minutes of the second half. We've had 6 goals in all, but that possibly the best of the lot. Dynamic.
We're a different animal than we have been in the last 2 years. I think we've put a lot of focus this year on improving. We had a long pre-season, which the last couple of years with COVID, it was a small run into the championship. And this year, look at, we've made steady progress all the time, and we think we're hitting the right tunes, I suppose, at the right time. And look at, time will tell that too, Pat.
Very comfortable win for Laois today, 3-14 to 3-6 against Tyrone, beating the Ulster champions in MW Hire O'More Park. It means that they have qualified for the knockout stages. They're going to play against Wicklow in the next round.
With Louth and Tyrone accounted for, Laois were into the All-Ireland Intermediate quarter-finals. Their opposition were Wicklow, and Donny Brennan's side delivered in fine style. After this game, we caught up with Shifra Havel and Jane Moore.
We've been here before in Kinnegad last year, but we would say this is a different Laois team, in fairness, and they've strengthened up. This Wicklow team, that's going to be some opposition, we believe, to
Emma Lawler out here under the sand. Turns inside the player, goes back into the middle, pops it off to the fast running air for Patrick, and pops it across the square. Did Laois have a goal there? Yes, they have. And a great goal there, worked from Laois. And that's a super score from Shifra Havel, as we said. Great to see her on the scoreboard, but well worked move for Laois. Aaron Fitzpatrick was running through. Aaron has topped over the bar, and that was the feature of the last day against Tyrone. That strong running from Aaron across to Emma Lawler. Emma Lawler was shot. Emma Lawler with a goal. So to Aaron Fitzgerald, now the breaking and forward Laois onto Aaron Fitzpatrick. Aaron bearing down. Aaron with a shot. Aaron with a
goal. Dying, and they do, and they're a credit to everyone.
It's always just about getting the win at the end of the day. And we had kind of decided that before this match that we just wanted to put in a good performance.
Victory in the end for Laois. Very, very comprehensive points to 8 points, confirmed by the Ladies Football Association. But that semi-final, along with the other one, will be played on the 10th of July. So coming up in a couple of Sundays' time.
Then there was one. One game between Laois and a shot at history. Clare and the Burning Sun were the opposition on July 10th in Roscommon. Stephen Bradley introduces the coverage.
Our marquee game of the weekend, it's the All-Ireland Intermediate Ladies Football Semi-Final featuring free-scoring Laois. You know, Donny Brennan's Laois have scored 12 goals in the last four games. The last three games, I should say. Playing an incredibly attractive brand of football. Getting to the semi-final of the Intermediate again for the first time in 3 years. Playing Clare, who beat Longford 3-11 to 4 points 2 weeks ago. So this should be a cracking affair.
You're welcome here to St. Bridget's GAA Club of Kiltoum in County Roscommon. This is fantastic facilities here, fantastic pitch, glorious weather. Water will be required in copious amounts today, but what a fantastic setting this is for what is going to be a big game. Danger for Laois has done their number 12 goals aside, and they got through, and they got through, and that was Amy Sexton from Kilmurry Brickin there. She got on the end of that. That's just danger there, obviously, and Clare with a goal.
Yeah, I mean, look, it's one of the concerns that you put that high press up on from a Laois perspective. And Clare overturned the ball now, and they're in on goal.
They're overturned, and here they come again, Clare. They pop it across. Can this be second goal? It's gone over, thankfully, for Laois. And Clare mentors are disappointed with that, but that was a real danger. They went short with it. Laois are coming in here on the attack. Comes out to Laura Marie Marr. Laura shot, and Laois have landed a goal. And who? None other than Mo Nerney. And the referee has called full time on the match, and it's going to be extra time. The referee's bringing in the ball, and this is Mo territory, we'd hope. Mags, I think she's going to go for it.
It's well in her range, so she's on the top of the D, has the accuracy, has the distance, and just popped over. A lovely score. That'll give Laois energy. They need to push up on the kick out.
Mo's taking her time, as you would. Laois are ahead by a point, 220 to 219. And Mo again, sharp as you like, straight over the black spot. Laois go ahead by 2 points now. She goes across, pops it across forward to Laura Marr, and it's all over. And Laois have won, and wow, what a dramatic finale. Wow, what a game. And this is unbelievable stuff. And by God, Mags, we didn't think of this first half, but by God, are we delighted. What a fantastic effort from Laois. Great credit to Clare, but what a super show from Laois, particularly Mo, but every player from 1 to 26.
Absolutely thrilled for the girls. They absolutely deserve it. Look, there's always ebbs and flows in games, and Clare had their purple patch for a long period of time.
And with that, the day in Croker was booked. According to their manager and their PRO, Phil O'Keefe, they're ready. They just need your support.
I'm calling on everybody, not just as a Laois player, but everybody in the county and all the surrounding counties to come out and support Laois. It's our first time to play in Croke Park since the 2001, and it's everyone's player out there. Every one of those players is their first time, so it's a big, big achievement for those girls. We have to call on all the clubs all over the county to come out and support us every way they can. They need it, and every player needs support behind them. Not only their clubs, but the whole county across the board.
We'll just go give it hell for leather, perform on the day. Everyone will do themselves justice, because you don't know, do you know, to be honest. It might take them a bit to settle in, but you know, the one thing we will say is I don't want the game to pass them by, and we'll be determined to give it our best shot.
And that report by Midlands 103's David Hollywood. Still to come, where does Sinn Féin stand on climate emissions targets? And next, some great things to do around the Midlands this weekend. So did you sober up after yesterday?
I don't know. Now that one cocktail, it really did a number on me, and I'm a little bit shaky today now, I can't lie.
That is the voice of a hungover Cameron Clark, who is producing the Midlands Today show, and yesterday sampled some cocktails from Brown's The Venue.
Fantastic cocktails, you should add.
Yeah, sampling or downing, anyway, we won't discuss what happened afterwards. Point is, he's recovered, he's done his research. We hope he hasn't missed anything, but if you're involved in an event and you think others should know, well, 083 30 10 103, now is the time to text and WhatsApp rather quickly. Where shall we begin?
Well, I'm going to take a dig at my potential researching skills, because I could have missed something. There's a lot going on in the Midlands over the next 4 days. So we're going to take this chronologically. We're going to start today.
Okay.
So Burr Vintage and Arts Festival kicks off today. Now, there's a lot going on. I've picked out one highlight, which I think you might get. Given your age, you might like this. There's the 80s Supper Club in the New Order District. It's going on at 7:30 today. So as you can imagine.
1980s theme.
Yes. Yes.
1980s. Best decade for music, for movies. I defy anybody to disagree.
Well, I can't disagree because I am a lot younger, as you can tell, by the way I look, and by the way I sound, the sound of youth coming out here. I don't know that, but I might attend and then combat you on your thoughts.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But we're going to move on.
Thank you.
Because you're giving me a dirty look and I'm a little bit afraid.
It's the let's move swiftly on look, yes. Yeah. Burp Vintage Week is more than just about an 80s night.
Yeah, but that's what I'm highlighting today.
Right.
Now, we're going to continue with Friday. We're going to move to Durrow. The Scarecrow Festival continues. There's a children's talent show going on, 2 to 4 o'clock. That's the highlight I've picked out for that.
I didn't get a chance to drop down this year. I'm curious, are there any Donald Trumps or Niall Horans or other distinctive scarecrows? If so, please WhatsApp a few pictures just to give us a smile and we'll share them on the Midlands 103 Facebook page. But great to have the Scarecrow Festival back.
And after round out Friday, we're going to take on some sport. I know it's your favourite, but we've got a lot of football going on today. So in Westmeath, Tang face Rosemont at Castle Daly. Clare and Edenderry meet in O'Connor Park in Tullamore this evening in the Offaly Football Championship. And in Laois, senior hurling goes on. It's Ballinakill against Rosenallis. So we're going to round out Friday there. Now, moving on to Saturday. It's a little bit busier. We've got Dangan Home Coming Festival. That mm-hmm. kicks off today. But tomorrow, we've got
music. By the way, the film night in Dangan is tonight, isn't it?
It is.
Yeah.
Yeah, that actually could be very interesting. That's off at 8 o'clock in Dangan Town Hall. Could be something very interesting. Mm-hmm. Moving to Saturday, there's a music and dance workshop at 10:30, also in the town hall. So I don't know if you fancy staying the night, maybe after the film festival, you camp outside.
Pop into Amerigo's for some chips afterwards, yeah.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And then you can kick off there. Burr Vintage, again, offline film festival, have a sing-along music and movies table quiz. A lot of movies going on this weekend. That kicks off at 8 o'clock on the Chestnut Music by Alan Cassidy & Co. €10 per person. Big day. And then if you're in Kilbeggan, family fun day in Relic Road. Barbecues, small candle rides, face painting. So there's a lot going on Saturday. We're moving to Sunday, which I think is...
This is now when we get really busy.
Yeah, Sunday and Monday are particularly busy. For the next 4 days. So we're going to start with Stradbally Steam Rally. Kicks off on Sunday. How much do you know about it, Will?
Not a lot.
I
wish I did, but I can appreciate visually how impressive they are. Don't ask me how they work.
I also don't know how they work. So maybe we might have to attend and find out exactly how they work. I think it might be a good way for us to go. Another big one, Flack Hole and Heron kicks off Mullingar on Sunday. Is that more up your lane? How are you on the music?
Well, I know it's a whole week of not just organised sessions and Skolegsha and all of the wonderful performances, but spontaneous. You just walk around Mullingar, walk around any host town during the FLA. Music is everywhere. It's in the atmosphere. It's beautiful.
It's chaos in the best way. It's very pleasant. It's very festive.
Mm.
When you walk around, you just feel it's a lot happier than walking around a quiet town.
Oh, you walk among an ocean of people.
Yeah, it's.
Have you been to one before?
I haven't actually.
Ah, you're in for a treat.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to change that about my life. Yeah,
keep going.
So we're going back to Dangan.
Mm-hmm.
On Sunday, the Arts Festival is continuing, and a Dangan Festival and Mini Maroons Parade. This rounds it out. That's in the town hall. That starts at 12 o'clock. So a lot going on in the town hall in Dangan this weekend. And finally then back to Burr for the Vintage Festival. Their parade is also going on. So Burr and Dangan in a little bit of competition for the best parade? Do you have a preference on towns?
I pass through Dangan every single day, going to and from work, so I have to be diplomatic here. Birr has scale that Dangan does not, and that's no disrespect. It's just size.
So are you sitting on the fence?
Yes. And moving on, we would point out also that if you are going to the Stradbally Steam Rally, it's not just about the steam engines. They have bouncing castles and kids' areas and a craft village and a pet farm, and there's plenty for people like us who don't appreciate the steam as much as we should.
Now, I appreciate them. I just don't understand them.
Okay.
It's wondrous.
Yes. We have to do Monday in 20 seconds.
Okay, moving on. So, Flat Kiln Heron continues Monday. Stradbally Steam continues Monday. Burr Vintage and Art continues on Monday. And then we have a little bit of a different one. Gibbstown Drive-In Bingo takes place the August Bank Holiday in Kelly's, Slane Road, at 3 o'clock. And you can win up to over €16,000.
Yeah, big prize pot.
Yeah.
And the Burr Air Display.
Very exciting. Although Cahill has said the weather might not be all that exciting for it.
That doesn't matter. Bring your poncho, bring your umbrella.
And enjoy it.
You'll be fine. It's an air display. It goes with the territory. When is the Abbey Leaks Rectory Garden Fete happening? Well, that's Bank Holiday Monday as well.
That's Monday as well. So a lot happens. Monday is the busiest day. A lot happening. You're going to stretch yourself very thin to make it to all events.
Yes. Yes, indeed. And I'm told as well there's a beat on the street in Banagher. Actually, if it's Banagher, is it bait on the straight? That's terrible, isn't it? Anyway, news at 11 is next. In a few minutes, our Friday panel will recap what was a very busy and unusual week in which we learned that Irish judges rely on Wikipedia when coming to their decisions. Also, the daredevil pensioners. Do you know somebody who in later life is even more adventurous than you are? And the final episode of Neighbours. Oh dear, will you be watching? Well, that's on the agenda from 20 past 11. When you call 0818 300 103 is the Midlands 103 comment line. You will caller of the day and win a stunning prize thanks to the Charter Battery in the Midlands Park Hotel. If you become caller of the day, you can enjoy gourmet coffee, casual lunch, a relaxed evening, maybe a nightcap before bed. Anyway, part of a taste of Laois, which we're celebrating this week. Now, earlier we looked at the government's agreement between the three coalition leaders to reduce emissions in agriculture by 25% between now and 2030. And if you're wondering, well, where do other political parties stand on this? Let me quote Labour leader Ivana Bacik. She says, it is unfortunate the government has landed on just a 25% emissions target for agriculture when all the science is clear. The sector must have reductions closer to 30%. The Social Democrats TD, Jennifer Whitmore, who happens to be the party's climate spokesperson, she says the deal demonstrates a complete lack of leadership, that the government was not capable of making tough decisions when it comes to climate challenge. And she noted the independent advice said the sector should reduce emissions by 30%, not 25. The largest opposition party is Sinn Féin. And in the last Dáil, Laois Offaly TD Brian Stanley was its environment spokesperson. Deputy Stanley, good morning.
Good morning to you, Will, and your listeners.
If you were still in that position, and indeed if you were Minister for the Environment, what figure would you have settled on?
Well, the first thing I'd say to you is that I wouldn't have waited till July 2022 to start this work. You will recall that I spoke to you and indeed you were the only radio show in the country that actually covered it when I launched Power in Ireland 2030, for example, and various other initiatives and bills that I brought forward back 5, 6 and 7 years ago. And my predecessor, Michael Cleary, TD for Leitrim, his work on it back 10 and 11 years ago. That's the first thing I would say to you. So, you know, I welcome the fact that, you know, despite the fact that Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael have been slow learners in terms of the fact that we need to deal with climate emissions, that they're now doing it. But the problem is that they have now reached, a cliff edge with this, and they want farmers to make a full stop and a full turnaround. And it's a game of what I would call yo-yo politics, it's a bit like what Fianna Fáil done with the building industry back in the noughties. You know, let the banks fire money out, incentives for builders, for developers, throw up houses all over the place, and we finished up with ghost estates. And now we finish up 10 years later with not enough houses. They're doing the very same thing with the agricultural sector, in that, you know, farmers were encouraged to intensify, farmers were encouraged to invest in dairying over the past 10 years. And now they want to say to them, stop here, and each percentage point over 22% is estimated by some of the farming organisations will have to result in up to 90,000 head of 90,000 animals of a cull.
I don't wish to dismiss any of the points you've made, and farmers will feel a little led up the garden path if they invested particularly in dairying. But the question was, what would the Sinn Féin target have been?
No problem, I'll answer that. What we have asked for, and the Agriculture Committee looked for it, my understanding is as recently as a week ago, the modelling and the figures and the statistics that the plan is being based on, or the targets are being based on. And we've asked that the government publish the model and all the analysis, including the McKinsey report, which informed the ceilings for the negotiations, in order to show the range of options that are considered and the trade-offs and the compromises that have been agreed. And what I would say to you, Will, is that if you were asked to take out a loan to buy a house or to buy a business, and to take out a loan on that, but Midland Radio 3 said to you that, well, we're not sure what your wages are going to be. Your wages could be 30,000 or it could be 5,000 a year. Well, you wouldn't take out the loan, would you? You wouldn't take the risk. What I'm saying to you is that you need to make an objective and correct analysis of this, is that the figures and all of the modelling and all of the analysis that has been used and made available to government ministers, and this is not just we look for this. You know, the Agricultural Committee looked for them as well. This should have been published, right? We're very, very clear that we have to reach a 51% reduction in our greenhouse gas emissions by 2030. And I've spoke to you many times about this, and have put forward proposals. And it's as simple as that. We have put forward a range of options. We put forward a range of options. You remember, you'll recall me talking to you when I was vice chair of the Climate Action Committee, when the climate report was being done to inform what was now called the Climate Action Plan. Myself and Deputy Munster fought hard at that time to have hedgerows and forestry and agricultural lands included for sequestration of any carbon plan. You recall me talking to you about bioenergy and about anaerobic digestion and the research that we had done on it. The fact that Germany has 12,000 plants.
But in that case, if you have all that background knowledge, and if the other parties I mentioned, the Social Democrats and Labour, were able to say that 25% is not enough, why couldn't you come up with a figure this time, notwithstanding those reports you were missing? Surely you've had enough information already.
Very straightforward, Will, is that we haven't the figures of where matters are at in relation to government targets, in relation to what actual hard plans, because while we've heard the target this morning, not for the first time, we haven't seen the plan to back that up, you know, in relation to small-scale wind for farmers, solar, organic, all of those. That has been, there's been no consistency in terms of what's set out or information available in terms of how we're going to reach this. We're up for dealing with these matters, but you cannot simply tell people, you know, over a period of a decade, this is the direction you need to go in. And everything that was done pointed, the signposts were pointing in that direction, and people were farmers and agricultural areas and rural areas were encouraged to go that way, and they didn't stand up and say full stop.
And unfortunately, it has happened before, and Bordnamona workers know that all too well. But
we met, and just for information, you know, some of the other things we've been doing, we met Bordnamona in recent months as well, in Offaly, myself and Mary Lou MacDonald, and our energy spokesperson and climate spokesperson, Darren O'Rourke. We didn't make any big hullabaloo about it as part of the regular meetings that we do with Bordnamona. Mary Lou wanted to meet him at Mount Lucas to actually see firsthand what we need to be doing in terms of, as a political party, helping them in rural Ireland to diversify, to see the progress that they've made the remarkable progress they've made in 12 months in terms of carbon sequestration and in saving jobs, which is very important, and how we can help from a policy point of view. You know,
and what conclusions did you draw from that?
Well, there's a number of conclusions. One is that, I mean, the direction that they want to go with in terms of, they want to be actually more ambitious in terms of anaerobic digestion, in terms of solar, and we do need to help them with the planning process regarding those matters. Mm. It's clear from what Tom Donnan told us that there is an issue. Tom Donnan being the manager director of Bordermona, CEO of Bordermona, we're absolutely clear that there's a problem there in relation to the length of time that it takes for planning applications, for solar and for anaerobic digestion. They're also doing research on nitrogen and hydrogen, which is very, very important. And hydrogen will become a key player in terms of some of the alternatives that are available, and their plans for offshore wind, which are very, very important. So, you know, we're engaging in this, in the work of doing it. And I would say to you this, Will, this morning, that, you know, that there was targets set every other year that have been missed. We're being told consistently by government that carbon tax would do it. Carbon tax was increased. We accept that there was carbon tax there in 2019 and 20 of 430,000. And I mentioned this figure to you back at the time. We accept that. When they increased it and increased it again, we objected to that. The figures I got was for last year is that 650 million was brought in, 651 million was brought in last year on it. That, loading that on the communities that don't have an alternative, particularly in hardest hit rural communities where there's, and rural people who have lower incomes in particular, is simply doing nothing for climate change.
And yet, the opposing view is that those workers you mentioned earlier in Bordermona and others affected by the decline of the peat industry, they stand to benefit from the funds raised under carbon tax. So,
and the answer to that,
are you contradicting yourself?
And the answer to that, Will, is very, very clear. If you do the sums, is that the 430 million collected, that was being collected, was adequate, more than adequate, if that was ploughed into those communities and into retrofitting, right? So if you go back and look at those figures again, you will see that funding was more than adequate. Sinn Féin's argument was that you just can't keep increasing it, because what you're actually doing is you're penalising those who are caught in the most difficult situation. And by the way, part of that money is also being used, as I told you a few months ago, the information we got Public Accounts Committee, to fund the subsidising the purchase of large SUVs in Dublin 4, where people have bus stops and trams and Dart and loose passenger houses. It's being used in those areas, you know, to subsidise, in a lot of those areas, to subsidise large vehicles. That's what it's being used for.
Well, I think there's going to be a whole other conversation around grants for transport, and the target there is a 75% reduction in emissions between now and 2030. But I'm conscious of time, and I want to conclude by asking, the next election obviously is a promise to nobody, but if the opinion polls are correct, you'll be in a commanding position to take over and drive this towards 2030. What are you going to be doing between now and polling day to make sure you have enough information to do that?
First of all, we're looking for it. We can only look for the information, and we will be doing that. I've outlined the figures we have today. Some of those figures, a snapshot of them, and I think you'll see from that we have been keeping a very, very close eye on this.
You're surely not going to walk blind into government.
It's not a brief that I have at the moment. I have a different position now, as you understand, for the last two years. But what I would say to you is this, is that we will be advocating, and I said this to one of your researchers yesterday, we are advocating a wide suite of measures. You cannot play yo-yo politics and say to people, you know, everybody run in this direction, everybody invest in this, and then somehow or another put up roadblocks and say, hold on now, stop sharp. The consequences of that are catastrophic.
But are you going to get behind the targets that have been set and therefore build on that policy, or are you going to oppose what has been proposed?
The 51% has to be reached, but there's a whole lot of other issues need to be dealt with, including rural transport, you know, including deforestation, including dealing with the area of carbon sequestration, including the energy bill that I brought forward, the microgeneration bill, which government sat on in the committee for 3.5 years and are only now moving to allow farmers and households and businesses to generate electricity from rooftops, etc. They're the measures that are needed. There are hundreds of measures that will have needed, will. And if you think, or I think, or anybody else believes that this is going to be solved by stopping people in their tracks and saying, oh, we must do a sharp U-turn now at this minute, that's not going to work. There's 100 measures plus that are needed to actually deal with the issue of climate change. And we must deal with it. We have seen the effects of it across the globe, including on our own doorstep in the last 3 or 4 weeks. We can't deny that it's happening. There's a 51% target to be reached. We're determined that that's reached. But what we must have...
Will you come in around the table? Because this deserves far more time than we've afforded it today, and a variety of voices. So if we maybe create a cross-party debate, will you join us?
Love it. And will you recall that as Vice Chair of the Climate Committee, we pledged, and I think some people would admit, the most active, myself and the other two Sinn Féin people who were on that committee back 5 years ago and 4 years ago, we played a very active role in shaping the climate action plan in terms of the report that we brought forward to government at that time. So, you know, we believe in a collaborative approach. We have taken that approach to Brexit. We have taken it to many other matters, right? We took it in relation to the plan for health, for sláinte care. So we were actually the ones in 2016 who said to the government parties, can we sit down and hammer out a plan for health, all parties, and get broad agreement on a number of areas. So we're capable of doing that. We do it in the north. We'll do it here in this state. You know, we'll do it on a global basis and on an EU basis. What I am saying to you is that we have to have honesty in all of this. We can't have the Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael, yo-yo politics, where they put up roadblocks, where they tell people to go in one direction, go down one road and borrow, and then stop them and say,
I think that's your third time to make the point. It's well made. Brian Stanley, grateful for your time. Thank you.
Thank you, Will, as always.
Brian Stanley is the Sinn Féin TD in Laois Offaly. Now let's meet our Friday panel, and today we are joined, first of all, by Pat Davitt of the Institute of Professional Auctioneers and Valuers, and a man from County Westmeath who is getting all set for the FLA. Are you excited?
Yeah, well, I think when you see Mullingar and you see the condition that it's in and the job that has been done by the County Council and the workers and all the people of Mullingar, shop owners, etc., it's absolutely brilliant. So, yeah, you would be excited. Why wouldn't you? It's great.
And Gabrielle McFadden is with us as well from Athlone, former Fine Gael senator. Athlone and Mullingar often have this rivalry. I presume, though, you'll come across the county to enjoy some traditional music.
Good morning, yeah. Oh, well, I'm half Mullingar and half Athlone. My father was Athlone and my mother was Mullingar, so I'm Westmead, so I'm delighted. It's great. It's a great thing for Mullingar and for Westmead, and I wish them all the best with it. It's great. It's fantastic.
And Barbara O'Connell, who's our other guest from Dolan's Pharmacy in Tullamore, you'll remember, I think it was 3 years in a row, 07, yeah. 08 and 09. And yeah. How did you
and
find it?
I was pregnant for all three of them. I was overdue for all three of them. It was great crack. And my husband kept saying, this is my last night out. This will be my last night out. And so in the end, I joined him. It was great fun. It was just mighty crack. Really good.
So is it Coltus's fault that you have that many in the family then?
No, not one of them can play an instrument at all.
All right.
Oh, no, they're all Christmas party babies. 3 September babies.
So. We've been talking for much of this morning about the government's climate emissions targets, and it's at this stage just target. We've yet to see the detail and the plan of how, for instance, agricultural will get to a 25% reduction in emissions. But you live in, I think you're in rural Westmeath, Pat, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, well, I live outside of Mullingar, originally from Castlepollard, but I live in Crooked Wood there now at the moment, yeah.
And great farmland in that direction.
Yeah, well, I suppose when you look at Ireland in the whole and you see Eamon Ryan, like, you know, he's really interfering in rural affairs in rural Ireland. That's what he's up to, I think. Like, you know, when you see him standing there and telling us this is good for Irish agriculture, I don't know how many people he thinks actually believes that. Because if you see Ireland and the cut for a country that's producing such fantastic beef and milk and cheese and all these products, and you see a cut in our herd, if there is going to be a cut, like you see our herd of 7 million and cows, probably milking cows or something like that, of 1.5 million, And you see a cut of that even at 5% in relation to what's going on in Brazil, where you see probably a herd of probably 200 million or possibly even more, and America 100 million. And you see a little cut like this in Ireland. What, you know, you see people hanging outside the door and talking about this. And, you know, if it doesn't happen, we're going to all burn up. It's ridiculous, really, I think. And I think for the whole of the sort of, you know, the Chinese at the moment, we look at Money Point and it's a gas power, a coal powered station. The Chinese up to 2026 are going to build 43 money points. They're still building and they're going to continue to building to 2026 to produce 33 gigawatts of electricity. And I think Money Point produces less than one.
But does that absolve us of our responsibilities?
No, I don't think it does, but I think it leaves Ireland in a different state. I think Ireland has many opportunities to create electricity. Wind energy, I think, is one big thing. So I think if our two ministers, instead of last week arguing over the targets, went to Europe and tried to get a delegation for Ireland of some description or a protected status or something for our agriculture, I think it would be a lot better off and let farmers try and produce electricity through wind. And many other things like solar as well. I heard you speaking about that this morning. Unfortunately, solar in Ireland with the temperatures we get probably isn't the greatest, but certainly the wind part of it is going to be fantastic. So I think without culling the herd, if they don't make it any bigger or don't allow it to get any bigger, I think, yes, it could be one thing. But regardless of the fact of what we do in Ireland, it's only like the four big countries in the world we all know are China, America, Brazil and India. And they're where the problems are. And so like we can do our best, but like to start cutting culling herds, I think, is ridiculous.
Gabrielle, can we get your perspective? Because you're not actively involved in full-time politics these days, but I'm sure watching from the sidelines the exchanges between your party, Fianna Fáil, and the Greens, do you wonder if the tail is wagging the dog, or do you agree with the policies?
Well, I mean, look, I can say what I want now because I'm not a politician. So, Brendan Griffin, a former colleague of mine, called for people in Dublin to get rid of their SUVs because, you know, he said it wasn't good enough that they were driving SUVs, and he was equating it to Eamon Ryan saying, you know, that the farmers should do all that they can. You know, the Green Party don't know what it's like, I think, to live in rural Ireland and to invest all of your life in your farm, all of your, you know, everything that you have, it goes into the land. And for someone like Eamon Ryan to come out and say what he says all of the time, it's just, it's ridiculous. It's bordering on ridiculous. I mean, he wanted a 30% reduction. We're on 20, we have agreed to 25% reduction. I don't know if that's achievable, but I do know that the farming community have been trying for the last number of years to be involved and to try and do that. And they're willing to negotiate, and they're willing to work towards it for the greater good, which we all need to do. But for people like the Green Party to come out with, you know, things that they come out with when they actually don't know what it's like to invest your whole life and your whole family in a farm, I think is ridiculous. And then you have the likes of Sinn Féin, who won't come out with a figure, who won't actually come out with a policy, because they're sitting on the fence, waiting to see which way the wind blows. And you know, we all have to come together and do this together, whether you're Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael, Sinn Féin, Green, or whoever you are. We all have to work at this for the greater good. And I think that, you know, 25% is a target. I don't know if it's achievable because I'm not I'm not a farmer.
What about the 75% in transport? I think that could be, for rural Ireland, even more contentious once the full implications dawn on people that if you're living in a rural area, chances are it's a diesel car at the moment, and the cost of upgrading to electric is prohibitive for most people.
Absolutely. And there's no public transport in a lot of places outside of the Pale, you know, and it's just not viable for people to, you know. So I think everyone has to work together and do their best. But I think people, you know, certain factors like in the Green Party in Dublin calling the shots for rural Ireland, I think it's just it's not a good idea. And I don't think it works. I think we all have to. It shouldn't be divisive. We should all work at it together. You know, you're right. And I mean, there are people that work in, say, for example, carers working for the HSE who can't afford to put diesel in their car to drive themselves to work. And they don't have public transport either, you know. So I don't know. I mean,
Now, that being said,
it remains to be seen how well it'll work.
That being said, and Barbara, you have a pharmacy based in the heart of Tullamore, and you look out and you see the cars parked every day.
Yeah.
Are there some people who could perhaps take a bus, walk, cycle in Tullamore more than they do? Accepted that some will travel from maybe Portlaoise or Clara or wherever to work in Tullamore, but are there local people who could do more?
They can only do more if there's, you know, an alternative means of transport for them. Now, I'm guilty as charged. We have kids that go to school out the country and one goes to a primary school. So like, my husband brings them in one car to one school. I bring them to another, you know, to another school. So with the cost of diesel, we will be looking at a bus or carpooling this year, or, you know, to just have one car on the road, because I know, like, to fill my car, it's just nearly doubled in price, and everybody is the same. But it's all very well about greenhouse emissions and the farmers and all that, saying all that. But what's the alternative for them? So if they want to cut the emissions by 25%, you know, they took away milk levies, so everyone was able to increase their herd to make a decent living. So now what? So now you have to cull your herd. So what is the alternative? It just seems to be cut, cut, cut. It's like everything. It's you must cut this, you must cut that, you must cut the other. But there's no alternative in order to maintain people's lifestyle. That's all I see. It's like, what's his name? Eamon, whatever his name is.
Eamon
like
Ryan.
He lives in Dublin, Eamon Ryan, where there is all these facilities. My mother was a farmer's daughter. So you can't expect people to just give up their livelihood. It's their way of life. And why should they?
Well, I imagine Pippa Hackett is the minister based in the Midlands in the Department of Agriculture. She lives in Gieshall. She's a farmer herself. I'm sure she'll have a lot of challenges over the weekend trying to explain to constituents. And we hope she'll join us on the programme maybe next week for a bigger conversation.
Yeah. So like her children, I'm sure some of them will want to stay on the farm. And why shouldn't they be able to have a future in farming? So it's fine. We all know we have to cut emissions. We all have to make the effort. Everybody does. And everyone has to make a small effort to sustain the planet. But what is the alternative? What are they suggesting the alternative is? Where is the help to start farming differently?
On text and WhatsApp, a listener says, "Will, after all that was said by Brian Stanley, I still don't know what percentage Sinn Féin would look for. Am I silly or did I miss it?" Well, there was no percentage given, but he argued they did not have access to the relevant reports on which to base their decision. Anyway, that's not the only topic for our Friday panel this morning. Pat wants to get in.
I think, Will, that this is really going to be down to rural deputies and all Éireann. Let them be independent or whatever they're going to be. And I think they have to stand up and be counted for rural Ireland. So I think that you're going to find that rural deputies probably will vote against this anyway. And if it means...
Well, will they? Because there was a vote on turf some time ago, which many rural TDs said they would not abide by on having any interference with the right to sell turf in communities, and ultimately that passed.
Well, I believe that this issue, that they're going to have to stand up and be counted, and if they do stand up and be counted, I think it will be at one time. Granted, if the coalition, if it falls asunder, well and good, that's the way it is. But this is a very, very important issue, and people have to talk about it, and they have to sort out what's in their mind first. And obviously, if they're from rural Ireland it is. Like, the number of the herd of cattle in Dublin is the smallest in the country. It actually equals somewhere like Leitrim, I think. But the Taoiseach's going to have huge problems in Cork because that's the biggest county and the biggest numbers. So, like, there's going to be huge problems for different rural deputies. But, like, you know, in the Dublin one, there isn't going to be that big of problems. But, like, people who have a vote and who are independent at the moment or wherever they are, I think the independence is going to go one of these days soon, and they're going to have to be voting against this.
Well, let's hear one last point on this from Gabrielle. And you say you're freer to talk now that you're out of politics, but you can give us some insight. If you were still in Leinster House when the whip comes around and says this is coming to a vote and you must go the way of the government, how much pressure comes to bear and which way would you go?
Well, I mean, it's obviously it's pressure, because if you're sign up to be Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael or whatever, Green, you have to abide by the whip. And if the whip says this is it, this is it. I think the pressure will not, well, the pressure will come primarily on the parliamentary party before any decision is made. I think the pressure will be from rural TDs and senators in a parliamentary party that, you know, that will be where the pressure will come. They will have to vote with the whip if they don't want to lose the whip. And like, you know, it's simplistic to suggest that people will just walk away and, you know, vote against the government and allow the government to collapse. I mean, if the government collapses, then, you know, we're in a whole different situation again. I don't think we can afford as a nation to have a collapsed government now with the winter of discontent, I think that's going to come. So, you know, there's an awful lot to be taken into account, but I think the pressure will be in parliamentary party meetings. I think, you know, there will be think-ins at the end of August, the beginning of September for all the parties. And I think there will be huge pressure on the Dublin TDs and senators from rural TDs for this, you know. And yes, Micheál Martin, you know, he's a rural TD and has a huge farming sector in his constituency. He's going to be under enormous pressure. So I don't know what will happen. I would want to support, personally, I would want to support the farmers. I don't think farmers are looking for anything less than anybody else. I mean, I think that they're willing to work with government to do the highest percentage that they can without actually doing themselves any harm. And you know, 22 and 23% were mentioned, so we're on 25. So I don't know, you know, but there's more than just the farming.
By the way, one thing we haven't mentioned, it remains to be seen whether the Green Party membership will accept this. Perhaps they will feel disappointed in the reverse.
Maybe. Yeah.
Now, we have
it's a very complicated situation to be in, I think, you know. Adding it to all of the different, you know, issues with the crisis we have in the cost of living crisis and what's going to hit us for the winter. You know, it's not going to be an easy winter for any government, I think.
Well, on that, we learned this week how shoppers' habits are changing as a result of inflation. On our Friday panel, we have Pat Davitt from the Institute of Professional Auctioneers and Valuers, Barbara O'Connell from Dolan's Pharmacy in Tullamore, and former Fine Gael Senator Gabrielle McFadden, who's based in Athlone. And this week we learned how shoppers' habits are changing as a result of grocery price inflation, which is only going to increase, unfortunately, if all these predictions about Ukraine are correct, although there was a deal struck last week on the export of grain. But the survey by Kantar Research suggests we're buying more own brand products than was the case 12 months ago. When you look at your own shopping basket, Barbara, how has it changed, or has it?
It's just got so much more expensive. I have four kids and, you know, three teenagers. They're always hungry. And the other day I went to It's just, you know, one of the cheaper supermarkets. And one of the kids was with me and I got, you know, the top up shop. It was 80 euros for the basket. And even one of the kids says to me, "Mom, 80 euros, it's normally 40. And there was nothing, you know, coffee or cleaning agents or stuff like that.
Was there some vino in there?
But there wasn't. No, because I don't drink. I drink very little.
I'm not just being facetious or cheeky, but because of the minimum unit pricing that was introduced, if you pick up a bottle of wine or a bottle of vodka or whatever, it is that bit more expensive now.
It is, exactly. And even, you know, what was the, I love Prosecco, and the cheapy Prosecco is now 9 euros. I don't know what it's called, the one with the string on it in Centra or wherever it is, or Dunn's. Anyway, that's even gone up. But it's just so much more expensive. Everything has gone up. So you do, definitely you do, you buy the whatever, the own brand pasta and the own brand. The kids are fussy about the cereal, all right, but you'd be buying, you know, you just...
But, you know, it's not just kids. We had a listener point out that Kellogg's Corn Flakes is the only brand of Corn Flakes you should buy. And the pylon, so many agreed that whatever it is about Corn Flakes, there's only one company that can do them right.
I would agree with them, but the Shreddies are the same. The Muesli's nicer in the own brand supermarkets, or the granola or whatever you call it, the kind of the loopy cereal, you know, the stuff, the treat stuff, like the Cocoa Pop, Chalky stuff, that's all much nicer in the own brand cereals. But I actually have to agree with them on the cornflakes. The own brand ones just don't do it for me. No, or the kids won't eat it. So that's a waste. You're better off buying the the branded one, the Kellogg's.
Another story shared by a few listeners is how they're inclined to go between supermarkets much more now than was the case before.
And yes.
Unfortunately, you have to be time rich to do that. If you're working a full-time job and you're commuting and so on, a shop is an inconvenience. You tend to just go to the one.
Well, what you do is you're you know, this week it's all my Dunn stuff. This week it's all my, you know, Lidl stuff. This week it's all, that's kind of what I would do. But absolutely, you would be going much more through different supermarkets.
Mm. Well, one of the reasons they do it is because there might be a special in one this week and you have to kind of go around to see where the specials are and where the labels are. Have your habits changed, Gabrielle?
Yeah, no, they definitely have. And I agree with Barbara. Like, I'm not a very good shopper. So I'm not one of these people who can do the shop for the week and be done with it. I wish I could, but I can't. So I would be doing the shop, which would have, you know, things like detergents and loo paper and that kind of stuff and coffee stuff and stuff like that, that you'd only buy once every week or 2 weeks or whatever. And then I would be running in between all the time. But, you know, where I would run in a couple of times a week for different things and I'd pay maybe spend 30 euro, it's definitely gone over the 50 euro mark for that. But, you know, I think sometimes we're a bit snobby about products that we buy. And if you look at some of them now, and I can't even name them because I don't know off the top of my head, but some of them are actually made by the same people. They're just packaged for super value or, you know, they're the same thing. It's just a different packaging. So I think, you know, people are starting to look at that now. And I think people are starting to buy super value own brand or, you know, but there's certain things you just wouldn't do that with. I'm a coffee, mad coffee woman. And I mean, I have to have it straight into the veins in the morning. There's no way in the earth that I would have an instant coffee from super value. Do you know what I mean?
Why not?
So there's certain things because it wouldn't be strong enough. I love it like really strong. Do you know what I mean?
Put two spoons in, not one.
Huh?
I know. I'm only winding you up. I'm exactly the same. Coffee is one of those indulgences,
just one
and
of those
it has to be
I
right.
Compromise
yes.
On.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
But if you go into Super Value and you look at it, a lot of the products in Super Value are made by the same people. They're just packaged for Super Value in a different packaging. So I think people are looking at that. You know, you can't afford to be driving around between Super Value, Dunn's and Lidl on a good day because the cost of diesel and petrol and time. You know, so it. You know.
Well, we all be walking soon anyway, so we just have
true.
To get
but
bigger
too,
baskets
you know
for
what?
The bike.
I think it's cheaper to eat like we ate when we were younger. You know, your spud and two veg and a bit of meat and that kind of thing. And I think people are going back to basics a little bit more. And I think that's no harm, you know. I think it's healthier for us, you know, to stop buying the rubbish. And I mean, if you look in the trolley, you know, yesterday I was in Super Value and the only thing in the whole shop that was reduced was wine. And I bought it.
I was about to ask.
Yeah, no, I did. There's no I won't lie. I did.
I'm
the Prosecco,
just wondering,
unfortunately,
then,
wasn't reduced or I'd have bought that.
You're saying about the healthier choices. One of the penalties of buying healthier is very often it can be more expensive. And anybody who, for instance, tries to buy celiac products will know just how punitively dear they are.
Yeah.
Anyway, Pat, a man's perspective on this. Are you responsible for the weekly shop?
I'm afraid not. I'm afraid I'd have to ask Mrs. Davitt, but I know she complains about the price of shopping, the way it's gone up, all right. And I'm sure what the girls are saying are perfectly true. So that I wouldn't have any really thing to say on it one way or the other. I have very little shop that I do, being quite honest. Which is a good thing or a bad thing, I don't know, but very, very little.
But the food on the table hasn't changed.
Food on the table hasn't changed and we're still eating away and whatever. I'm sure it has got more expensive. There's no doubt about that, but we still have to eat anyway.
Well, one heartening result for Irish farmers, I think, this week was that the smell of bacon frying on the pan is our favourite scent. topped a poll of many people who had some unusual scents that they enjoyed as well. And fresh cut grass was not on the list, which many listeners found peculiar.
I actually heard you talking about this the other morning. Yeah, it was a very interesting discussion. But the if the fresh cut grass is great, but actually on maybe the day after the fresh cut grass is the day I prefer it. There's a beautiful smell of it altogether, like as if it's nearly turning into hay or something like that. But I know from a lawn point of view that wouldn't be the case. But some of it's left over. I love that smell, yeah. But rashers, yes, of course, it's a, I'd say it has to be the top one.
Barbara,
good.
Barbara, you need to watch the staff in the pharmacy now, because deep heat was on the list. You don't want them sniffing that in work.
I love the smell of it, but yeah, we'll be all going around sniffing that. I love that smell. People, so yeah, I do, it's a real love or hate thing. Yeah, I love that smell. And I love Fisherman's Friends, which kind of are like edible deep heat. I drive the girl mental. Right. I just all the time. And when we had to wear the masks, I couldn't eat them because the fumes kept going up into my eyes from the mask.
I'd say sales of Fisherman's Friends must have collapsed then during COVID. They'll be glad it's over.
With the Fisherman's Friends, but it's, they did, I love them. I love the smell of deep heat. And then, you know, you kind of sneakily feel very athletic if you have the deep heat on you. It's like, oh yeah, I did it. Yeah, not that you actually brain your back taking the washing machine, but no, I've just run a half marathon, that's why I need it. But no, I love it.
Yeah, well, actually, I find the, I'm not sure if it's called deep freeze, but the opposite effect, you know, those gels that you put on and they cool, that can nearly be more beneficial after a run.
Yeah, well, it depends. You're probably running a lot faster than me. I'm not running at all. I'm only walking at the moment. But
I've slowed down.
I
find it strange, by the way, that the stench of a wet dog was also on the list. I would have thought that was in reverse.
That's shocking stuff. Oh.
And I it love seems to smell coffee.
Yes, I coffee, yes, agreed, especially when it's in front of you, ready to be served.
Yeah. People go mad. I loved that smell as well.
Will you be watching the final episode of Neighbours, anybody?
I saw the first one. Imagine, I saw the first episode of the Neighbours on telly and of EastEnders. So I'll have to watch the last one.
Does it make you feel old?
Yeah.
Very. My eerie, yeah. You see Arlene and your man, Scott, was it? Is that it? Jason Donovan? That's my kind of vintage. Yeah, definitely. Oh, yeah, I'll watch it. Just to see Kylie Minogue, sure. Why wouldn't you?
Well, after 37 years, it's coming to an end. And the last instalment shall be screened on RTE2 on the 3rd of August. That's, what is it,
next
Tuesday?
Wednesday. Yeah.
Will you be watching, Gab?
No. I won't, because I never really followed it when it came out first and when I was younger. And I have to admit, I'm very old in my ways. I'm a huge Coronation Street fan. And I can't get the accents from Neighbours out of my head when I hear them. I just think it's just not right. I think that I love Coronation Street. I used to watch Coronation Street with my mother.
So you've got good associations then.
Yeah. And I think there's no comparison. You know, I just think, you know, I never watched it really.
Well, I used to watch
Emmerdale Farm. Me feel old.
Emmerdale Farm with my nana once upon a time. And I think she would be spinning in the grave if she saw Emmerdale as it is today. It's nothing like Emmerdale Farm.
No.
It has changed. But anyway, there we must leave it. I'm grateful to everybody for taking time out for the Friday panel. To Gabrielle McFadden, former Fine Gael Senator from Athlone, to Barbara O'Connell of Dolan's Pharmacy in Tullamore, and to Pat Davitt of the Institute of Professional Auctioneers and Valuers, who pointed out, by the way, that when we were summarising all the great things to do this weekend, we neglected to mention the Scratch Cup in Mullingar. Isn't that right, Pat?
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah, it's it's practices on Saturday and Sunday, Monday's the game. And actually this year, my young fella, young Patrick Jr., is taking part in it. Three boys from Mullingar, but Patrick is one of them. And obviously wish all the guys from Mullingar great, be very, very well. It'd be great if one of them won it for Mullingar. But the golf club and the grounds and the course itself is looking incredible, to say the least. So it's... hope to play there myself tomorrow, so I'll be able to join in. Hope I don't get a bang of some of the balls from some of the boys that are practicing, but however, it looks great.
Best of luck to all concerned and have a great weekend. Lots happening around the Midlands. Enjoy, and we'll chat to you Tuesday morning from 9. Take care. Bye bye.